I'm going to go ahead and get started. We are starting a few minutes later than I would normally like to start. My sister-in-law, Lisa, is in the hospital, supposedly giving birth at the moment. So we had our niece that we had to get ready to come to church as well, and so things took longer than they normally do. So, lesson 96. You should have in front of you lesson 96, and the title of this lesson is Wrongly Deriding Christian Brethren, O'Hare's Response to Ironside. Okay? So we have spent the last two Sundays going through Wrongly Dividing the Word of Truth by H.A. Ironside, and we've been looking at exactly what he said and so on, and his attack on what he called ultra-dispensationalism and Bullingerism. And now what we want to look at today is O'Hare's response to all this, and how does he respond and so forth. Now, just to back up, we've seen already, guys, that coming into the 1930s with Unscriptural Cathedrals, which is written in early 1931, that O'Hare is still saying that he's always taught and believed that the church began at Pentecost. We saw, when we talked about this booklet, Much, Little, No Water, which dates from March 1933, that he is still making statements that are very confused about. He's not making statements, he's raising questions more than he is making any statements. And so now what we're going to look at is something that dates clearly from 1935, where he is replying to Ironside's book, Wrongly Dividing the Word of Truth. So if you look at the introduction, point number one. Now, when I first read Wrongly Dividing the Word of Truth by Ironside, I cannot understand why Stamm and O'Hare responded so harshly to what appears to have been a critique of Acts 28-ism, not the mid-Acts view. It has only been in the past 3 months, since late December 2012, that I have come to understand why. As we have previously observed, as late as March 1933, when O'Hare wrote Much, Little, No Water, he is still making Acts 2 statements. So here's the point, okay? When I first read this booklet, Ironside's booklet, that is, I couldn't understand it. I couldn't understand why Stamm and O'Hare were taking what he was saying, particularly O'Hare, so personally, because it seemed like what Ironside was doing was critiquing Acts 28 view, not a mid-Acts view. Now that I've had the benefit of doing more research and reading, I think that I understand better now what is going on. So if you look at point number two, the Grace History Project now believes that when O'Hare began to question the traditional Acts 2 position, he gravitated for a while towards Acts 28-ism. During 1935, both in Wrongly Deriding Christian Brethren and in Issues of Bible Study for Bereans that began in August, O'Hare makes comments that resemble the thinking of Acts 28-ism. This would explain why O'Hare took such offense to Ironside's publication. In short, when Wrongly Dividing the Word of Truth is read in its historical context rather than in isolation, a new understanding of the thought history emerges. Heretofore, even within grace circles, there has been little clarity as to the development of O'Hare's dispensational thinking over time. This is no doubt compounded when O'Hare is studied by those who are critical of the grace movement theology. For example, Adam O. Christmas, author of the doctoral dissertation, An Analysis and Evolution of Interpretations of J.C. O'Hare, Cornelius Stamm, and Charles Baker, concerning the origin of the church, water baptism, and the commission of the church, views wrongly dividing the word as more focused on the extreme type of ultra-dispensationalism espoused by Bullinger and not the moderate form taught by O'Hare, Stamm, and Baker. So if you read this gentleman's dissertation, he explicitly states that the booklet by Ironside is an attack on Bullingerism or ultra-dispensationalism, not O'Hareism, or what he would call moderate dispensationalism, okay? Now, this demonstrates, finishing that point, this demonstrates that even opponents of O'Hare's theology lack a clear understanding of how his thinking changed over time, okay? Now, listen, if within the movement that O'Hare was a part, there has not been much clarity as to the historical thought development of his thinking over time, you certainly wouldn't expect to find that in people that are critical of what O'Hare was teaching, okay? So the Grace History Project believes that wrongly dividing the word of truth is reflective of parts of O'Hare's thinking in 1935. So the goal of this lesson is to prove that for a time, O'Hare was making statements that had much in common with the Acts 28 view espoused by Bullinger and Welch. Okay? Now let me just clarify that just for a moment. Even though by his own testimony he had not read them extensively. Okay? So I think what's happening is this. As O'Hare is beginning to question Acts 2, he begins to gravitate towards Acts 28 view in his thinking. Alright? Ironside writes the booklet Wrongly Dividing the Word of Truth, which is critical, as we've already seen, of, quote, ultra-dispensationalism and Bullingerism. And as we're going to see, O'Hare responds very personally to what Ironside is saying. And what I'm suggesting to you is that there is a reason for that in the development of O'Hare's thought history. Okay? So, are we at least clear on that so far? Do you have a question, Mike?
No.
Oh, okay. So, let's go to point number two then. Wrongly deriding Christian brethren. So this is all dated. On May 20, 1935, Pastor J.C. O'Hare addressed a letter to Dr. H.A. Ironside titled Wrongly Deriding Christian Brethren, in which he voiced his many objections to the dispensational teaching found in Wrongly Dividing the Word of Truth. Since we have already considered Ironside's book, that'd be lesson 94 and 95, we will limit our comments here to understanding O'Hare's response to Ironside. As a general rule, the reason why the two men disagreed dispensationally was because of their divergent views of when Israel was set aside. Quoting now from Mr. O'Hare, as I've said to you before, that's telling. Why is that telling? Because they've had prior communication on these issues, okay? As I've said to you before, our differences as to water baptism, the gifts of the Holy Spirit, and the dispensation of the grace of God, and the dispensation of the mystery, are because we do not agree as to when the nation Israel will set aside. Okay? In the following quotations, O'Hare makes statements in his response to Ironside that are very consistent with Acts 28-ism. Alright? Specifically, he speaks of the dispensation of the mystery not having been revealed until the close of the book of Acts. Now, these are all quotes from Mr. O'Hare in Wrongly Deriding Christian Brethren, his response to Ironside. So let's look at the first one. He says, I cannot definitively fix the time when the risen Lord revealed the mystery of Ephesians and Colossians to the Apostle Paul. But I do know that there is no statement concerning the dispensation of the mystery during the Acts period. There must have been some reason in the mind of God why he withheld the writing of Ephesians 3, 8, and 9 until after he pronounced his judgment upon the nation of Israel in Acts 28:25-28. I believe that there is a very definitive turning point with the close of the Acts period. Whether or not we call it the close of the transitional period or the beginning of a new dispensation, your ultra-dispensationalist brethren do not teach that the message of pure grace began with Paul's prison epistles, neither do they teach positively that the risen Lord had not revealed the mystery to him before he reached Rome. They do know that the dispensation of the mystery was not mentioned before that time, and they have learned by the study of Ephesians, Colossians, and 2 Timothy glorious truths that are not to be found in any of Paul's pre-prison epistles or in the oral ministry of the 12 recorded in Acts. Okay, so let's just process that statement. Does he view Acts 28 as significant? Is he recognizing that there are things about the mystery that certainly are not revealed until Ephesians and Colossians are written? Okay? So he's clearly stating those points. Let's look at the next one. I believe that the times of the Gentiles, politically or governmentally, began with Nebuchadnezzar's siege of Jerusalem in 606 B.C. Now watch this. And the times of the Gentiles religiously or spiritually began after God's judgment upon Israel pronounced in Acts 28:25-28. So he's saying that the times of the Gentiles spiritually did not begin until when? Acts 28. Now, that is a statement that is very much in line with an Acts 28 interpretation. Okay? And here's Mr. O'Hare making that statement. Let's look at the next one. There is such a radical change in the program of the church after the close of the Acts period that it might as well be considered a different church or a different dispensation. Okay? The close of Acts certainly closed a transitional period which was in the mind of the Lord as well as in the mind of the apostles, or it marked the beginning of a new dispensation. From my Bible study, it is difficult for me to make the New Testament covenant dispensation and the dispensation of the mystery one and the same. To my mind, 1 Corinthians 9:20-22, Acts 20:16, Acts 21:20, 23:4, 23:6, 24:6, in light of Philippians 3:6-12, proves that Israel was before God as a nation until the question of those significant words from Isaiah 6:9-10 and Paul reached Rome. That marks either the end of a transition period or the beginning of a new dispensation and the revelation of truths theretofore unknown. So, folks, is he saying things that are very consistent here with an Acts 28 interpretation? He absolutely is, okay? And he's responding to Ironside based on this line of thinking. He goes on, I could agree with you that the message of grace was proclaimed in the Acts period, but could never agree with you that the Lord would have ushered in the dispensation of the mystery at Pentecost and would have kept his few select well-trained apostles in such ignorance. Did the infallible Holy Spirit lead them to say that what was happening and what was being offered to Israel was the fulfillment of promises made by the prophets who were wholly ignorant of the mystery? And then last, quote on this line, how any student can follow Paul from Acts 13:22 to Acts